Welcome to Success Secrets, the podcast where we dive into the inspiring stories of individuals who have overcome obstacles and achieved remarkable success in their professional lives. Get ready to be inspired and discover their secrets to success. Meet Craig, with over 14 years of financial services experience as the co-founder and group CEO of Will You Financial Group. Craig's vision is to revolutionize advisory services through the Will You app, consolidating financial needs into one accessible platform. Join us as Craig shares his insights on transforming the financial landscape. Hi, Craig. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Lizelle. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to doing this, so thanks for having me.
Me too. It's such a pleasure to have you on. So to start, can you tell me more about yourself, your background, and how you got interested in the finance industry and how you entered into starting your own business and everything like that?
Yeah, great. Sure. So my background was quite a different one, really. My background was motorsport. So I raced at a relatively high level in cars and karts. And then sadly, that came to sort of quite an abrupt halt when my father fell quite ill. He was the sort of backbone in the funding of the organization. So, of my career. So when that stopped, it became quite a challenge to, continue. So I 24, I was relatively lost. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And what I sort of quickly realized is that I loved city life. I loved being in town. And I took a stockbroking role as a junior at 24. So I was relatively quite late. I hadn't been to university. So for me, this was sort of very much a sort of T-boy role that I had to take. But that's where I found my passion for financial services and I guess now sort of fintech to a certain degree, but financial services in its first instance.
Nice. And I love that you mentioned that you didn't go to university because I also didn't go to university. And I have a question on this. How do you think not going to university has helped you in your career and business? Do you think it's made your thinking differently? And what would you share on that?
It's a really great question. And I don't really think there's a right or wrong answer to it. I think I came out of it. What motorsport taught me was life skills and being around a real sort of variety of different people. Motorsport can be quite an elite sport. So actually you spend a lot of time with very successful business owners, and without even knowing it at a very young age, you're very much involved and you're having conversations with these individuals that you don't really know at sort of 12, 13, 14 or 15 that you're having these conversations. A lot of time these conversations with these people you would sort of dream to have a meeting with, but as a kid you don't really know because you're in the middle of Cumbria at a car track, so everything's very, very neutral. But listen, I think university has its qualities. I think university is great for various different things. I mean, obviously there's sort of routes to market that you have to go there for, whether that's medicine, maybe accountancy, whatever that may be. But I don't think it's a massive requirement. I do think it takes up a lot of time. I'm a firm believer, and I think what we found within Will You is that that final piece can be taught. I think the most important part is that if you're willing to learn and you want to be in the crux of a business, some of the best hires that we've had during Will You are really bright people in school that haven't gone to university who have become the best sort of versions of themselves and morphed into the role whilst learning on the job. The reality is you finish university and actually for what we actually do, you need to go and do those separate exams again anyway. So it was a big shock for me, for sure, having to go back and do exams. School was something I really didn't enjoy. So there's no way really that I wouldn't have had the grades to get into university anyway. There was no sort of ever intention for me to want to go to university and study at university. The party lifestyle really wasn't for me anyway. So I don't feel like I really missed out too much on that piece either. So
Nice. I love that as well. And I think that it's great that you've mentioned that it's not the be end or end all if you don't go to university, because obviously a lot of people are thinking, oh, I have to go to university to be successful, but that's not the case. If you dedicate yourself to a lifelong journey of learning, self-development, personal development, then you're going to set yourself well ahead of your competition and everyone else. And I've also read a book about that a lot of entrepreneurs don't actually go to university because they didn't actually get on with school, because being told what to do was not their thing. They didn't like it.
Yeah. I mean, I think as an entrepreneur, I think I'm not a huge fan of that word, but I think, you know, as a business, as an owner, and yeah, I think everybody has a sort of element of entrepreneurism in them. I just think it's sort of whether the timing is right and you know, everything in sort of, I think I'm a great believer in sort of the stars aligning to start a project, having the time to sort of devote to it. But, you know, that's not always the case. And in interview processes in our organization, I ask people, like, why don't you go and do this yourself? You're clearly very passionate, you're very skilled. And there's generally a lot of not the same sort of questions, in that, you know, children or you know, they can't take the risk. But I do think there's sort of various different levels of entrepreneurism, right? I think people bring so many sparks to our organization that, you know, have got very clear signs, and not all of us make the right decisions at the right time. But ultimately, I think, yeah, I mean, that entrepreneurism is like, is also around timing, and I'm a firm believer of you, like, hard work is the only way to get to where you need to. There's no quick solution for any of this, unless you hit something just out of the ordinary. But generally, it takes a lot of time, a lot of work, and a lot of commitment of turning up every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. It's really not for the faint-hearted, because at the beginning, like, it can drive you insane, and there's no such thing as a work-life balance at the beginning of your entrepreneurial journey. It's all about hustle, hustle, hustle. But I mean, you also have to try as hard as you can to keep your mental health healthy and keep your fitness up and everything like that, so you stay in peak performance. And you mentioned something about calculated risks and taking risks. Obviously, building a business takes a lot of uncertainty and taking risks. Can you share a pivotal moment or decision in your business journey and how it impacted the direction of your business?
It was quite an easy one for us, actually, Lizelle, because I think that I was falling out of love with the industry, just because I'd worked at sort of a few, you know, for a very short period of time when I moved up the city. I worked in various different roles when I first moved up to London, and that was in sort of international payments, a little bit of recruitment, and a few other sort of specific investment opportunities. It was only when I then found sort of stockbroking and the equity market where I've sort of really fell in love, because, again, we go back to that point that you mentioned there around the harder you work, the sort of more you got out of the whole stockbroking side, the more you read about what stocks were coming up for reporting, what could impact that, the reasons why you should be buying individual equities. You know, the harder you worked, the more you read, the more you sort of studied, and the harder you worked, the results came. And for me, that was very much like, I had my whole career as a young racing driver. That for me was like so important. The harder I worked, I knew the results on the other end would come through. So that was really, really important. But what was pivotal, I sort of went through the account executive program. I sort of managed the account executive team in a very short period of time, then moved on to the dealing floor. And there was a key figurehead in that business that everybody had a lot of time and respect for, who actually left the business. And I was sat there sort of, and the stockbroking hours are crazy. Like, you need to be in the office at 5:30. You don't leave till sort of 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. And obviously on big events, then you'll be there for sort of longer in the evening. So by one, quickly realized that wasn't the life that I wanted. I was getting on the train in the mornings. I could see people, you know, mid 50s, early 60s, still doing that same train journey day in, day out. They look miserable. They look tired. They look weathered. And I was sat there and I just thought, I could see my life playing out in exactly the same way if I didn't do something about it. And luckily, I became very good friends with one of the sort of top brokers on the floor. Well, he was the top broker on the floor. And we put together a plan to leave and start our own company. And that's where it really started. And that pivotal point for me was just that I was just gonna, I just found myself before I got to the point of in a hole where I couldn't get out of, I had to do something about it. And it was the best decision we ever made. You know, like you would generally say this in that we skipped to work on a Monday. And that was the problem, Lizelle, is that we were getting to the point where Sunday night was coming in. It was just like, oh my God, I've got to go to work tomorrow. I'm dreading it. I'm, you know, going in. And yet I loved the job, but I just fell out of love with everything else. And I think I just knew I had to make a change. And I was young, you know, I was 27 when I started Will You 7 years ago. So it's unheard of really that somebody of my age goes and starts their own stockbroking business at 27 and get directly authorized. But for sure, it was the best thing I ever did. And I learned so much through that process of going through it.
That's amazing, can I say? That's really cool. And it's great because I know you mentioned that pivotal moment for you, your epiphany moment. Not a lot of people get that. Actually, they probably do get that, but they're too afraid to take that risk for themselves because they're afraid of uncertainty, of failure, and everything like that. Did you feel like that when you took that risk, and how did you manage to overcome it?
That's a great question, and it's something I get asked quite regularly, actually. The answer to that was no, in that we never thought this business was going to fail. And you know, the group now consists of almost six different entities that focus on different things for organizations. And quite frankly, the first and the second actually were a flop, essentially, Lizelle. They weren't doing very well at all. But what it enabled us to do was find out what the client needed and what the client wanted. And essentially, Will You Financial Group, which was initially Will You Invest, just Will You Invest in the stockbroking side of what we learned and what we studied for and got our exams for, quickly realized that clients needed us and wanted us for so much more. And that was so important for us. So like we never had any fear that we were going to fail because we knew that we had such great relationships with our clients, and failure wasn't an option. Now, you don't know what's coming down the track in any situation. You know, businesses can fail. You know, there's things and events and things that happen. And, you know, I'd hate to think or dread to think that would be the case, but it could still, at some point, could fail. You know, you never know if there's another COVID situation or, but as long as your mentality is that business, if you go into that, you know, second, you know, doubting yourself and thinking that there's potential of this for failure, generally you'll fail, in my opinion. You have to go in very super, super positive and make sure that your sort of outlook, your vision, your goals are very aligned, and you just keep driving towards that every single day, and you'll get there for sure.
I love that. So you were very headstrong from the beginning, and you just said, failure was not an option. I have my dream in front of me, and it's now or never. And this was your life that you were working for, your dream, and that was your vision. And I feel like it's so strong to have that vision right at the beginning as well, because I always say eyes on the prize. So that helps you stay focused, helps you work hard, helps you create your dreams. And I did a talk, a TEDx talk a couple months ago on mindset. And you was talking a lot on the headstrong and everything like that. How important would you say it is to have, like, to work on your mindset in business?
It's a really key point. Do I say I work on it? I don't necessarily think I allocate time to it, but I do think that I probably find myself in situations where, again, I relate this very much back to sport. Sport, I think, sort of teaches you so much, and competing at a high level, I think subconsciously things that you do now just happen. And I think I find myself I spend my time traveling on the train. I think that's probably where I will find my inspiration and my time to sort of think, or when I'm in the car by myself and just things like that. So I think I don't necessarily train on it. I think it becomes second nature in the end. But, you know, for sure, there's been a few personal circumstances that I've been through, actually probably more over the last sort of 12 to 18 months that, you know, impact your life completely, like in terms of whether that's, you know, personal relationship, children, you know, there's constantly events or curveballs that are being thrown, or even staff that can cause issues within an organization that, or team members that, you know, people that you trust that then go on to do, make silly mistakes and cover things up. So I think it's when there's a combination of those things, right, Lizelle, where I think then it can come on top. I just think the positivity piece of everything is that you just need to get up every day and fight. And again, I think that that piece of failure isn't an option. Of course, at some point, it sort of creeps in. If it doesn't, then I think you don't care about what you have. You know, the fear of losing it should always be there, because I think if you don't care about it and your clients and what you give to them, you don't really care. So for me, the mindset piece is really strong, but I think that is on when you wake up in the morning and what that mindset is, because it's easy to get lazy, easy to get complacent, and easy to just stop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always say this, like I say this to me, my business partner, my team, complacency is you shouldn't get complacent when success comes, because anything can happen, right? You have a good month, maybe something happens, but you have to keep going, that you have to keep riding that wave. And don't get complacent, basically. If you want to keep growing, if you're working on your dream, then complacency is a killer.
I think a lot of people are guilty of that, Lizelle, in that you think, oh, you know, we are where we are and, you know, we've made it, or like, oh, we can take our foot off the gas because we've had a record month. Or, you know, listen, I think everybody is guilty of that. I think it takes a strong person if you don't, I think, but it's when times get tough. Personally, I think when you've had it so good for so long, it's so easy just to, you know, just to coast. I do think, you know, as much as I hate them and the sleepless nights and that you get, the hard times make the good times really, really good. And what it's like if you were to lose it, what impact that would have on you. So I do think every now and then a reset on that is so important. And I think the minute you get, as you said, you get complacent and you don't continue to grow. And also, that's not always the case for everybody. Everybody doesn't want to grow their business or stay where they are, which is absolutely fine. But it's very hard then to stay, for me personally, it's very hard to then stay in that zone of growing and wanting to be better, because it's so easy at that point just to switch off, you know. And yeah, okay, we're very lucky in a bit that a business that we've got recurring revenue, so we haven't got to keep finding new clients or selling a new product. Our clients are there, and as long as we continue to service them really, really well, you know, we could keep a business at a certain level. We know what the overheads and the costs would be for that organization to stay at that point. It's very easy to manage. But you could equally get very complacent in that, you know, you don't move things forward and you stay where you are.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think, and that also comes down to how do you find success and where do you want to be in the future, right? Some people, they're happy where they are and that's fine. But if you have a bigger goal, then yeah, it can be a killer for your growth, basically. So as you know, running a business can be a roller coaster ride with highs and lows. And you mentioned as well, it's important to have those lows, because then you manage to look back and restructure how you're currently doing things. And then that also sets you well up for success again. How do you maintain resilience and adaptability in the face of challenges and setbacks?
Great question. I think a lot of it goes back to that gut feeling of the business. And again, I think it just goes back to that fear of failure, in that, you know, that you've always got to have that in your mind, that what you've created and what you care about is, you know, I think personally as an entrepreneur and a business owner, you need to be obsessed with the journey that you're on. I think once you get to a point of where you've mentioned about reaching your success, that's a question I always really struggle with, is what does success look like for you and where do you want to be? And I know a lot of people say they have their sort of 2, 5 year, 10 year plans for their business, but I don't define that on success. So for me, I actually still don't know what that looks like for me yet. And I don't know if that's a strange answer to have, but for me, I don't have a defining moment of like what, you know, a boat or a dream house or, you know, what I do love doing is spending time with friends, family, my children, you know, and just, you know, the simplest things in life are really key, which we get every day. So I don't, that success piece is one question I really struggle always to answer because I don't really, you know, define what success looks like for me at the moment. But resilience, I think, is just that fear of failure and that you won't let this fail. And I think for me, as I said, I don't know, I feel like I'm repeating myself a little bit, but that's key for me in that just making sure, and the same with my business partners, that you just don't want ever that to happen. So you just keep going every single day.
For sure. And I completely agree that fear of failure is your drive. It's the fire within you. And funnily enough, because I used to work in the city in London as well, when I have that fear of failure, I'm like, oh, I can't imagine myself going to work in the tube, going into the city again. Personally, because I work remotely and I travel the world. And that's actually my fear. So I'm like, okay, no, this is how am I going to stay in this lifestyle? How am I going to stay to what I'm doing? Because I love what I'm doing. It's given me a great lifestyle business, but I'm also working on building it to the next level. And the lifestyle that I have, for me, it's my dream life. I think everyone has their own definition of success. For me, it used to be, beautiful, like materialistic things. I mean, those are great. But it's also about creating financial freedom for myself. I would define that as my success.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think just having that, just being able to do what you want when you want, and that doesn't mean, as you mentioned, extravagant things, but just being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it, I think is just so key.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs, someone that was looking to launch their own finance startup or finance company or any kind of business? Based on the experience and lessons you've learned. I know you mentioned that you started when you were 27. Would you say that it's important for them to go and have that work experience in the city to go and work at a company first before just going straight into a business?
I think the most important thing now is that there's so many different businesses. Historically, it was, you know, like, you know, you had to have an office, you had to have this, you had to do this. You know, there was very set things before that you used to have a business. I think actually anybody now can start a business. Not saying it's going to be successful, it's going to succeed or it's going to fail. I think the barrier to entry is really, really low now. And I do think a lot of people can enter the space and can be done at their own work time. So I actually do think sometimes there's an element now that whereby you can run things in tandem, right? So you can still do your work and, you know, keep yourself in a really sort of, you know, financially stable through your work and then, you know, find time yourself. My advice would be for sure, be ready. You're never going to be ready, you know, but be as ready as you can before you start that business. Do as much market research as you can, find out who your competitors are. But do it early. You know, my advice would be is that the longer you wait, the longer the harder life becomes and more hurdles get in the way. So, you know, I was quite lucky. My business partner's a little bit older than I am, was in a very different part of his life where his children were already at school and he had two children. Whereas when I started the business, I just got married and I hadn't had any children. So for me at the time, the risk was relatively small. One week in, we found out we were pregnant with my wife was pregnant with our first child. So I think for me, that was probably a catalyst to sort of really drive on and make the business more of a success than it, or make it survive more than that. But my advice to any sort of young person that's got a really good idea or doesn't even need to sort of, you know, be reinventing the wheel, but has a desire to start their business, certainly do it and do it early. And if you need to, fail early or make mistakes early, because you've got so much more time than to sort of put those things right. And I think so many people wait till it's too late and then, you know, their kids leave school and then at sort of 45, 50, they're then sort of rolling the dice and taking the risk then, which then becomes, in my opinion, is much harder because, yeah, you may be in a more financial stable position, but all those years of when you're younger and you've got that drive and the hunger to succeed with the energy, my advice would be to do it as early as you can.
Yeah, I love that advice as well. And I think if you've got that idea and you've got that drive, just go for it as well. And I like that the thing that you mentioned about learn, make your mistakes, fail quickly, fail early. And I've been saying this a lot as well, that you never really fail, you fail forward, because everything that you fail from, you learn from your mistakes. Well, hopefully. But yeah, you would learn from your mistakes and then take that into your next venture. And that would make, build it up for success in the future. Like for me, for example, I started my first business at 16, selling jewelry in Camden Market. I learned all about sales then. And then I also had a vintage clothing business when I was 20. So all of those things I've learned about business and how to operate and everything, like marketing and stuff. So it's allowed me to create a success from what I'm doing now, which is capitalizing that. And I've been running it since I was 23. So yeah.
You're the same. And again, your story is very similar to mine, in that whilst I was still racing, I was buying and selling cars. My dad had a car garage. Once he got better, and you know, I'd spend time sort of finding cars on eBay, driving around the country, pick them up, and just learning that, like, buying something for one price and selling it for another, it sounds ridiculous, but actually that's what business is about, right? In that, you know, finding a way in which you can create a margin within what you do. And I think that is the key, in that, you know, most businesses need to make money to succeed. I mean, obviously we're in a very strange world now, where lots of companies aren't profitable, but they're sort of maybe data capturing. So they might be data rich, in which they are. But ultimately, you know, for most businesses, I think also surround yourself with really, really good people, because older individuals who have been in business for a long period of time have made those mistakes. So the more people you can surround yourself with who have made those mistakes, you know, that is free money. Mm. You know, it's free time, because it's those situations that you don't have to make those mistakes again. And just speaking to so many owners and businesses as you can, that have made mistakes, and big, like, asking them the question. And so many people say and ask the easy questions, like, well, what, you know, what is it like starting your own business? Why did you do it? But actually, you know, if you're intrigued about someone and what it takes for a business to be successful, you know, what was your sort of, what was your worst moment in business? What was, you know, what sort of really scared you? Have you nearly failed? How did you get out of that? For me, like, those questions actually, from a, you know, because it's so easy to talk about the successes in the good times, because that's the bits you want to sort of shout about and talk about. But actually, behind the scenes, in most situations, and the last few days has been a sort of absolute proof of that, in that that so many people are constantly going through problems and struggles, but yet from the outside it looks so rosy, and like the businesses are doing so well. So, and people are happy to tell you that, like, you know, I'm never afraid to say if things aren't going great, or the reasons why they're not going great. I'm honest. I think that sort of really shines through, and if you can share that with people sort of really value that. Like, there's not been any point in time where I've spoken to a client and spoke about something negative about the business, they haven't then not given me business. They actually go, well, actually that's really honest, and you know, they are mainly own businesses, so they know what they're going through as well. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's key.
Yeah, that's so true, actually, that you've mentioned that, because all businesses, they look good on the outside, but you know, there's always stuff that goes down on the inside, and it's hard running a business. It's a roller coaster. There's always highs and there's lows. And it is scary. Like, there are scary situations where that you think, oh, like fear of failure, for example, is when your revenue starts to drop, for example, that's a fear of failure. And then that's a scary moment. So onto that question, scariest moment. What was your scariest moment in business?
I think there's actually been one more recently, but I think the biggest, scariest moment, I think, is that is where are clients coming from, new clients coming from, and how do we get in front of people, and how do we speed that process up? So I remember being sort of about 18 months to two years in, and really sort of thinking, I honestly just don't see where any new clients are coming from. We were doing enough just sort of keep the lights on. Which is why the financial group then sort of grew into what it has become now. because ultimately we needed to introduce another service so that we could do more business for those clients. And essentially what then happened is we then found one business that sort of really could sort of again, as I mentioned to you before we started, when we had a quick catch up before we started, but you know, finding, we're so lucky in that every single client that we, you know, anyone we speak to can sort of essentially be a client. And that wasn't the case at the start. We had two very unique products in that, you know, the investment part of the business, whereby it was, you know, looking after private clients, generally the sort of their accrued wealth over sort of the last 40, 50 years of working life. Now, just imagine that, in that you start speaking to somebody that you've never met before, they're not in 1 or 2 weeks just going to pass over their whole net wealth to you to manage. It takes time. You know, there's a journey that you need to go on, 3, 6, maybe 12 months before you actually receive that money. So actually our business is very much the other way around now. We do things that are essential and that every single person should have or does or needs. So for example, life insurance, do things that are very transactional that, actually, yes, we're very efficient at that. We gave you exactly what you wanted. And then those relationships over time, they become very much so much more confident with you, in that they will then give you those other things that take longer. And that was our fear. And the lead time, the deal time, was that even if we had a surge of new clients, we still knew that there was 6 to 12 months at one point that they were never going to become, you know, actually convert into an existing client. And that was the real worry that we had, in that it was just that we would just drown under sort of just not having enough clients right at the outset.
Yeah, I totally get that. And in finance, if you're dealing with big clients like that, it takes a long time for the onboarding process and to get them along the sales process. And yeah. I experienced the same thing when I first started my business as well. We were just doing it for the first year. We were just doing enough just to keep the lights on. I'm paying myself like such a minimum amount, so I completely understand that. It's definitely a scary moment, for sure. And on to, if you could go back in time to tell your younger self at 21 anything, what would you tell them?
I want to go back and tell myself. I think, you know, there isn't much I'd change, Lizelle. I mean, I think make decisions quicker, and go with your gut, I think is probably one of the biggest things that I would say. You know, go with your instincts. Generally, they're right, and make those decisions quickly. And they can be difficult conversations to have in some cases. But make those decisions quicker and stick by them. They're not always going to be the right ones, but generally you will get a good, you know, there's been so many occasions now over the last sort of 7 years of starting the business where, you know, we haven't, you know, haven't made decisions quick enough, and we've let things carry on, and they should have, you know, just deal with the situation and get them sorted. So I think decision-making for sure, is so important. Just make those decisions and make them quickly. And that might be for hires, that might be fires. Like, don't be afraid to just not to carry somebody or whatever that may be. Like, just make a decision quickly and stand by it.
Yeah, that's so important, because I think when you're running a business, like, empathy plays so much role. Like, you value your team, you care for them as well, and you have their well-being, but at the end of the day, it is a business, so you do have to prioritize that in that respect as well. So I think
you've got to have that human element, right? Like, people, it needs to be fun, it needs to come to work. But there's been so many occasions with people that we've had in the organization that we don't lose many people, we don't get rid of many people, or, you know, because we're growing and we want, you know, when we take a lot of time to make those decisions on when people come into the business. But I still am flabbergasted at the people that you think that there's been like 2 or 3 occasions that you think, you know, that person would do something to you or take clients or whatever that may be when they've left. They do.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard. You can't tarnish everyone with that same brush, but it does sort of certainly toughen you up and puts a different outlook on things, because you have to at some point sometimes just take the emotion out of it, which is really difficult, because when you really care about people, it's hard, right? It's, you know, you know, because you know they've got families and things like that, but you have to take that, you have to take that sort of emotional attachment away from it.
Yeah, it's hard, but I think that's also what makes us good leaders, is having that empathetic part of us as well, and considering them, but yeah, also trying to prioritize the business and think that that's also the entrepreneurial leadership aspect, isn't it?
I guess so, yeah.
Okay, so lastly, diversity and inclusion has become increasingly important topic in the workplace. How do you prioritize diversity and inclusion within your organization or team?
That's a great question. You know what? It almost just happens with our culture, I guess, because we're so lucky in that we work with so many different organizations, Lizelle. So we work with about 600 SMEs as a business. And we work with so many different organizations, and we get to see so many things that people do well and that people do poorly. Obviously, one part of our business is around healthcare, sort of deaf in service, those sort of things. So we get to sort of get really close with sort of HR departments, mm-hmm. and see what they're doing with things. So, for example, and again, I'm sort of not sort of diversity inclusion, but one of the things that we're very keen on is around ESG, so environmental social governance. We sort of incorporated and found what we believed is one of the best sort of pension providers or solutions in the market that includes that. So we're constantly looking for new things that can help with that. I guess we're in a very sort of we're in a great period, right, where there's so many platforms and so many things that we have at disposal that I've got an incredible girl who is a huge important member of our team who heads up the operations department. And you know, it's a very sort of huge part in what the business needs to do, and make sure that we're sort of on top of what we need to be doing, and also most importantly, not just ticking a box, you know, ultimately bringing and doing, you know, what we believe in as an organization. So for us, it's all about making sure that the inclusion piece and the diversity piece is included in everyday life, which is so important.
Amazing. Love that. Great answer. So we're just coming to the end of the podcast, and I have a couple of quick fun fire questions for you. What would be your favorite quote?
I'm not a quotes person, Lizelle. I mean, I'm a sort of one of those sort of questions as well. Like, there's no sort of mantra for me. Like, I've sort of obviously seen some great sports people, and obviously I live by them. But I'm sadly a bit of a bore on that. The quotes aren't quotes for me. Aren't
I don't inspiring I don't person then?
There. Sorry,
most inspiring person then.
Or most inspiring person, I believe, who was sort of a key figure in my life when I grew up, was Michael Schumacher. I think he dominated the sport, Formula One, for such a long period of time. He worked harder than everybody else, and that was the results that he got. You know, that's why the reasons why he was so successful in what he did. And you know, I don't think there's obviously some key people in motorsport now that I think do a great job, but I think that guy was the first in the garage every day at the weekend, last one to leave midnight, 1 o'clock. You know, people saw him leave so late. He was a huge, he had a huge impact on me as a kid growing up.
Amazing. Love that. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on my podcast, Craig. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you and getting a deep dive into your success secrets and your business and everything like that. You have a really cool and amazing journey, and I'm sure a lot of my listeners will be very inspired by you.
Thanks for having me, Lizelle. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.